from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll get a preview of the annual Meet the Artists exhibit at the library.
I'll find out about the Belfry Theater's production of the romantic Bell Book and Candle.
And I'll check out the IRT's production of plays based on Vonnegut stories. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. You can view the works of 18 prominent local African-American artists during the 26th annual presentation of Meet the Artists, open now through Saturday, March 22nd at Central Library. The exhibit is sponsored by the Indianapolis Public Library's African-American History Committee. Travis DiNicola spoke with artist Samuel Vasquez and exhibit curator Tony Radford about the show.
Tony, Samuel, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you guys here.
Thanks for having us.
Tony, let's start with you. You've been on Art of the Matter before, talking about Meet the Artists. You've been curating this pretty much since the beginning, right?
Since the beginning.
Since, yeah.
26 years.
Congratulations, man. That's fantastic. It's very cool. Tell me about, I mean, what sort of vision is still for Meet the Artists? Because it's a really special exhibit and event that takes place each year.
Well, the earlier vision I had was just to have a home for artists to be able to show their works. And out of a, you know, gallery setting where, you know, and then also for artists who are not in, you know, gallery artists, you know, just somebody who paints on the side, or Susie Homemaker who puts the kids to bed and paint, and, you know, just talented artists that don't get the opportunity to show in galleries or just don't know how to present their work. So, you know, Meet the Artists has become a outlet for them to do that. And we've, through the 26 years, have showcased everybody from, like I say, Susie Homemaker to up-and-coming artists to internationally known artists. And we've featured artists from as far as California, Atlanta, Ohio. And we've even featured in the past five incarcerated artists, and two of which went on to one won Best of Show at Expo 1 year, and the other one next year won first place in their category. So
it's a pretty cool blending of your own interests, too. I mean, you know, you worked for the library for a number of years, and being able to organize this through the library and have it there. But also, you know, I mean, you're a great artist yourself. I mean, working with kids and doing lots of great projects. I mean, it's a pretty cool thing you've been able to bring those two things together, Tony.
Right. It has been. It's been just, you know, a blessing. And I my wildest imagination that I would be
26 years later.
Years still doing this. But Meet the Artists has also created a lot of other things. You know, early on, we through Meet the Artists, we created a African American arts group.
Yeah,
it ran for about 7 years, and we got a letter, you know, from the Indianapolis Arts Commission saying that we were the most successful African American arts group and the longest running arts group, you know, in the history
of
Indiana. And, you know, all that was inspired from Meet the Artists, that forming that group and coming together as artists in the city, getting to know who we are, and networking and doing different things in the city.
Very cool. And it's also a great way to showcase artists that maybe Indianapolis hasn't seen before. Samuel, it's great to have you in our studio with us. I know you're known, you know, as a graffiti artist, some really interesting work that you've done. And this is your first year with Meet the Artists, right?
It is the first year. I've heard about it past years and through some exhibitions that I started talking to Anthony. Like probably like a year and a half ago. And came the opportunity to exhibit at Meet the Artists, and for me, it's an opportunity to expose and showcase the work to a different audience.
Sure, absolutely.
One thing that I do is look for those opportunities, actually in places where art is not necessarily known to be shown, and exposing it to a different audience. And I do very few shows here mm-hmm. in the city, and actually this one will be my last show here in Indianapolis. Opportunities to get the work out.
Okay.
So this will be a special location for me, and this is a great venue.
Are you you're moving on or?
No, I live here in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. This is home.
Okay.
But some of my background, I grew up in New York, mm-hmm. as you mentioned, and I did graffiti art there, the 80s subway trains and walls. So the artwork that I do now is more abstract paintings based on graffiti.
Okay.
As far as the colors, motion, rhythm of the artwork. So that's one thing that I'm doing, just sharing with different audiences.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be doing some more exhibitions in the state.
Okay.
But not necessarily here in Indianapolis. I've done over 35 shows, so that's a good exposure.
Oh, yeah,
for the
absolutely.
City. And they've been far and few in between mm-hmm. in the last 10 years. But this is a special location to be with Meet the Artists.
So for your work for Meet the Artists, you said it's more sort of abstract painting based on graffiti? Or
based on the colors and movement.
Yeah.
Most people will expect to see something that resembles more of what graffiti is known to
mm-hmm.
to look like. But I'm considered more of a writer, a tagger, which is something I did heavily in New York. If you've seen photos of the interiors of subways,
mm-hmm.
where it was just basically kids just putting your name up. So I explored the rhythm of writing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I'm doing more and more in my work. Also, the immediacy of it. There are some paintings where I like the paint, and just by gravity itself, it will drip.
Now, are you using, so as a medium, are you still using spray, or do you use other paints as well? Or?
I use spray paint. Minimal,
okay.
in a sense.
Yeah.
But I'm using also latex.
Mm-hmm.
I'm using ink,
okay.
which, you know, markers is, when I smell a marker, to me, it just brings so many memories. And every day, even in my, right now in my pocket, in my backpack, I got a few markers. So it's something that when I smell the ink,
mm-hmm.
it just brings back so many memories. And it reminds me of childhood and being a kid and just being imaginative and being loose with what you're creating.
Now, I'm curious because I've talked to other artists who have done graffiti and have gone more towards either galleries or other things, but not
yeah.
you know tagging any longer and such. How do you sort of yourself? I mean, I don't know if you ever have an opportunity to talk to your work about or talk with your work about to kids or to other audiences in terms of how that process for you has evolved.
And that's one thing that I'm doing more in the past year and a half. I've gone out. I've been to Herring High School and mm-hmm. talked to the kids there. I also did a junior high school and did a workshops with the kids, and also recently did the introduction to the 1983. Subway graffiti documentary Style Wars.
Yeah, yeah.
Over at the Indianapolis Museum of Art, and
mm-hmm.
also did a lecture about the art and history of tagging
mm-hmm.
over at Clues Hall. So that's one thing that I also do, educate the public about the history, about what was going on at that time.
Mm-hmm.
We see a lot of the what, but oftentimes we don't get to study the why all this happened, and why New York. And when I see it, there were so many things, with the fiscal crisis and educational programs being cut, social programs. So there was a generation of kids unsupervised with all this energy
mm-hmm.
and no outlet to express it. And graffiti was one of those, just like with hip hop as music, breakdancing, and also the fashion. So right now I'm studying that era and also studying the reason why it happened.
So, and when you have a chance to talk with those kids at art students
mm-hmm.
and,
yes.
And such, because I think one thing that's really important to recognize is that graffiti is a fantastic art form, mm-hmm. but it doesn't have to mean the illegal defacement of someone else's property.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's one thing that it's been spoken of more and more, and recently here in the city with some of the ordinances mm-hmm. or things that have been brought up to legislature. When I look at the time that I grew up writing, we didn't see it as legal.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost we didn't have the means to buy art supplies or whatnot, so we were using what was available to us.
Sure.
To the point where we didn't have money to buy markers, so we will create our own markers. There was that element of illegality involved in it. But as a kid, sometimes you don't, you just do it.
Yep.
And I think it's almost that that thing of like, well, you tell me not to do something, and guess what? As a kid, I'm going to do it. Now I see the value of the art form and like I say, studying it more and more and just at the whole culture,
yep.
And not just one element, because there's so much that was going on. And my artwork speaks of that. It was almost the whole thing of there's decay going on in the city, but we're going to bring beauty to it. We didn't have access to museums or galleries, so we're going to create our own artwork and share it with the city. Even though we felt like we were invisible, like we were the forgotten ones, we made you look. And that was a strong point of it. You didn't like it, but guess what? It's in your face every day.
Right.
And you see it, and you cannot ignore it.
You know, Anthony, that sort of grassroots approach that Samuel's talking about, in some ways it's kind of similar to the way you started Meet the Artists, huh?
Yeah. Actually, how I started Meet the Artists was I was just inspired. One day I was came out the doors in the hallway at Central Library, and I was at that time I was just getting my feet wet, and I was going to, you know, all the openings around the city.
Mm-hmm.
And I stepped out in the hallway, and I saw an artist's work, Joe Holliday, which back then was considered the dean of African-American artists.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the first time that I saw his work, and I saw the way he painted, and he painted black people, African king, queens, and queens, and little black girls sitting on the steps. And, I mean, his colors were so vibrant.
Mm-hmm.
And I just ran from window to window like a kid in a candy store, and I got
That's
inspired.
That's pretty cool.
And I wanted to know how I could show my works. So they told me I needed to call Barbara Alexander, who was on the African-American History Committee. So I called Barb up, and I was like, Barb, I want to do the show next year. I was excited. She said, well, okay, Tony. A couple of days later, after I figured it all out, I said, well, I don't have enough work to fill all these cases. I'm just getting started. So I called Barb back. I said, Barb, let's do a group show. That way I wouldn't have to have as much work. And then I told her, I said, well, you know, let's do a nice reception, you know, get a jazz band and have some food and get it, you know, publicized so people know. Because I think after a while I got kind of upset, because here's one of the best pieces of artwork that I've seen, but I didn't hear it on the radio. I didn't see it on the TV. I didn't read about it in the paper. It was basically just there for the sake of having some black artwork for African-American History Month. So I got a little perturbed, you know. And
and look at the event now. I mean, that's...
And that was one of my biggest things, to bring light on African-American artists and our talents. And
this year, you know, you've got, I mean, so many good artists, you know, 18 different artists that are part of it. I mean, including, you know, Alpha Blackburn, Terry Cox, Kenneth Horge. I mean, a lot of great people. You've got jewelry, you've got painting, mixed media, you know, all types of work. I mean, Denise Smith with knit sculpture, some really interesting stuff going on. And then the gala that you were talking about, one of my absolute favorite singers in town, Cynthia Lane, is going to be performing. And then you've got some other cool stuff going on with that too, right?
Right. And I just want to say that Cynthia Lane was just recently inducted in the Indiana Hall of Fame.
For jazz.
For jazz.
She's awesome.
She is. She's great. So it's an honor to have her. And you know, when we first started, like I said, you know, it started out basically visual art.
Mm-hmm.
But I started meeting people and, you know, hearing their stories. And you know, the next year we did it, I wanted to include youth. So we started a youth exhibit.
And I know this year you've got, Broad Ripple High School and Heron art
and
students are part of it?
Students, right. And then after that, you know, we... my whole thing was, after a while, was to educate people. And me and a friend of mine, Ken Skelton, we were, like I say, geeked up. We were like, we're going to take the art to the people. And we formed the organization S&R Productions. And we did 5 shows at the library within a year. And the first one was the Masters exhibit honoring older artists that had paved the way for us. And then our biggest success was Women of Color, when we started working with the women, and that's how Indie Renaissance got started, because these women were just hype and excited and wanted to get behind what we were doing. And about Ken, myself, and two other ladies were talking, and we formed Indie Renaissance. That was a year after we started Meet the Artists.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. That's a great history to it. You know, and it's, again, I mean, the whole exhibit is just a fantastic show, and it's going to be up through March 22nd. But the gala on the 8th, and we mentioned Cynthia Lane, but also you've got poets, you've got comedians, you've got gospel choir, you've got authors who are going to be there. I mean, that's a huge night, too. Very cool stuff.
The gala's a huge night. And again, you're going to get all genres of the culture of the culture, you know, poets, jazz, blues. We've even had a magician.
Yeah. And you guys got a fashion show, too.
Yeah, we got a fashion show. It's funny how the fashion show started. I think Meet the Artist 5, I had two fashion designers want to be in the show, and each one had different styles. And one lady did denim, and she had these big African masks and lions on the back of jackets and coming up the pants, and the other lady did more traditional African garb. So one day, you know, I'm up there again, and the idea hits me. I was like, wow, I wonder how, you know, this would look good on somebody. So I called them up, and I said, would you guys be interested in doing a mini fashion show? And they said, yeah. So I said, well, you guys coordinate it, and we'll do it. It took off, and now the fashion show is one of the biggest venues at the show. And a lot of people ask me, well, why fashion? How is fashion? Well, fashion has been part of our culture since Africa, when queens and queens dressed in silk and royalty. Mm-hmm. And then if you look at any pictures in the 20s, 30s, 40s, you know, we dressed. And then a fashion designer is an artist, too. They have to sketch
absolutely
the piece, and then they have to be like a sculpture and put that piece together. So it's very, you know, so the fashion show just took off, and I think we're in a almost 25th year of the fashion
show. That's pretty cool.
I mean, 20th year of the fashion show. So it's just been phenomenal. And I never, like I say, would have imagined that me seeing somebody's work being inspired would turn into 26 years of, you know, just representing and bringing artists and educating and working with kids. And I mean, it's done a lot for me as well.
Yeah.
You know, I've worked with different organizations. I worked for the Indianapolis Arts Center art reach program for 17 years. I worked with young audiences for 20 years. Very special arts, and yet I've done work with them. So it's given me a lot of exposure. And, I've gotten to work with youth, and that's been my biggest joy, is working with youth.
Absolutely. Well, Tony, Samuel, it's going to be a great show once again. Meet the Artist, 26th year. Congratulations to you guys both. Samuel, I'm really looking forward to seeing your work up there. And Tony?
Okay, and one other thing, I can't go without thanking our sponsors.
You bet.
The Crystal DeHaan family and the Library Foundation. Without their support, this wouldn't come to light next week. So we appreciate them for helping us out.
Excellent. Thank you guys very much.
Thank you.
Travis DiNicola with artists Samuel Vasquez and Tony Radford. The 26th annual Meet the Artist exhibit is open now through March 22nd at Central Library. The free gala reception is on Saturday, February 8th from 5:45 to 10 p.m. More information is available at the library's website, indiepl.org. That's short for Indianapolis Public Library, so indiepl.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Just in time for Valentine's Day, the Belfry Theater in Noblesville is opening their production of an unusual love story between a mortal and a witch. Belle, Book, and Candle. Sharon Gamble invited director Jeff Bick and publicist Kelly Bedell to our studios to learn how a paranormal woman and a mere mortal man fall in love, how they depict magic on stage, and how the production has inspired a visual arts show.
This is a really charming play, maybe from a little bit earlier generation. Can you tell me what the thought process was for choosing this play? Obviously, it's a romantic comedy at Valentine's Day, but... Why is this in line with the Belfry Theater?
The Belfry Theater is a small, not-for-profit theater in Hamilton County. the reason for this particular show had more to do with me than anything else. I'm a fan of magic. I love romantic comedies.
Aww.
The two really meshed really well together for me right off the bat, and I just kind of pushed it. And then I got lucky enough to get the Valentine's Day slot. It was something that got negotiated between the five directors who are directing this year. So that was really how it all came about from that standpoint. I'm also a fan of older movies, and while this is not my favorite movie, I do love the actors and actresses who are in it. I like this time period. So it all really fit really well for me.
So for the listeners thinking, gee, it sounds kind of familiar. Do you remind them of the cast of the film that'll remind them whether they actually saw it or just dreamed it?
The film starred Jimmy Stewart and Kim Novak in the lead roles. And Jack, what is his name? Mm-hmm. Lemon as the brother, as the very eccentric brother. It was
great casting.
Yes. Well, if you ask Robert Parker, who's the Turner Classic Movie guy, Jimmy Stewart was very uncomfortable with it because he was so much older than Kim Novak, and it kind of comes across a bit. But.
And wasn't that – I think that was the last romantic lead role he played, or pretty close to the last.
It was. He refused to do a romantic lead role after that.
Yeah.
So, yes.
So let's segue into casting. So I'm guessing that because it's such a charming script, you had a great number of people who were like, cast me, cast me, cast me.
We had a very good we were very excited. We had an exceptional talent pool that came out to audition, and I believe the cast we have is spectacular. I'm really excited about our leads, our Jillian and our Shep Henderson, the two romantic leads, are a husband and wife, real life husband and wife couple. So they have great onstage chemistry. You know,
surprise,
right?
The only difficulty with that is because they are already such a wonderful couple, and you can see it all the time. Mm-hmm. It took a lot of work to remind them that. Okay, you guys don't like each other right
now.
They
weren't supposed to start liking each other. But yeah.
Right.
And
so,
they don't know each other, which must be hard after you're in a relationship for a while to pretend you don't know that other person on stage.
Exactly. So that's been the biggest challenge for me with them has been there's a lot of giggles. There's a lot of that we've worked with. And they are wonderful to work with. Mm-hmm. They're a great couple. But there are a couple times I've just had to say, okay, you guys don't like each other right now. Please stop.
Stop batting your eyes at him. remind us of the plot.
The plot is that Jillian Holroyd is a witch in New York City. She owns a brownstone, and she sublets it to her aunt and a publisher by the name of Shepard Henderson. And she has become bored with the magic world and is curious about the more human world. And she finds herself casting a spell upon Shepard to have him fall in love with her. And we deal with all of the ups and downs of a magically created relationship.
Is there the sense that she's just experimenting, that she's just like, well, what would this be like, rather than this is my forever mate and I'm
– She starts that way. When she first casts the spell, it's more of a conquest for her than it is a development of relationship. And one of the premises of this particular witchcraft in this era is that witches are not allowed to fall in love. They're not supposed to be able to fall in love. So if she were to fall in – love with this person or any person, she would lose her magical ability. So this is something at the beginning, it's just it's an experiment. It's a conquest. It's a way to keep herself interested because life is boring to her. And then throughout the play, she starts to realize that it's more than what she originally set out for it to be.
And then it might be worth the trade-off to leave that world.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yes, there is a cost, or there is a believed cost anyways.
Mm-hmm. So is there anything – this was written in the late 40s, early 50s. Does that sound right?
It was set in the 50s, and I moved it up to the 60s just because of
– Really?
there were some costuming issues. There were some other issues that it just became a little easier to move this into the early 1960s.
Plus the costuming in the early 1960s and, you know, fashion forward New York City was just so much fun to costume.
Sure.
And we have we've had a great costuming experience with that and have had a lot of fun with it. Plus, so Jillian, her costumes are just, she's very trendy. She's very
pretty
fashion
mod,
forward,
huh?
Very much so. early 60s, maybe, as opposed to the mod
right.
of the later 60s,
right.
70s.
Yeah.
But you still that classic kind of Mad Men style of look and
Ooh.
Feel. So it's been a lot of fun to work with.
All right. So I have to go here. I'm sorry. I can't help myself. So one of the differences between the 50s and even the early 60s, and we see it on Mad Men, great reference, is women's roles are changing. And this is a romantic comedy, and I don't want to take away from that. But have you delved with the cast into the idea of, wow, is there a political statement in here about what this woman needs to give up to be with her beloved? And it's okay if you didn't. I'm just curious.
Well, it's a yes and no. It's a yes and no question. I see Jill, and I cast Jill, and had a very strong conversation with the actress about the fact that she's in control. She's an established power. She is an established witch. She has control of this brownstone. I mean, she obviously has some money. She obviously knows what she is doing. So from the standpoint that I wanted her to be much more empowered from that standpoint mm-hmm. and for her to realize that she has power and she is someone important. And one of the things that I took from the film, Kim Novak in that, if I remember correctly, owned a art shop. There are times in the script that we talk about the fact that she has had a large number of jobs. She's owned different businesses. So I very much wanted her to be her own woman. Whether I took it to the political standpoint, I'll have to admit that it was probably not really in the front burner, more how I wanted the character to be portrayed and also fit better into the 60s than the 50s,
sure.
as you brought up.
Sure. So let's talk about some of the supporting cast, because there's some kind of crazy, eccentric characters in here.
Most definitely. There are aside from Jillian and Shep, who are the leads, we have Jillian's younger brother, Nikki. We have Aunt Queenie, who is Jillian and Nikki's aunt, who lives upstairs in the brownstone. Rather eccentric witch with a skill set in witchcraft that maybe isn't quite as good as Jillian's, and that has a tendency to cause a little trouble occasionally. And then there's another one of the characters is Sydney Redlich, who is an author who is writing a book about witchcraft in New York, but doesn't realize that he's sitting in a room full of witches and warlocks as he's describing his new book to his audience. So you see the interactions between these characters as they build around Shep and Jillian's relationship there eventually.
Yeah. So how do you show magic powers on stage?
Without giving away too many secrets, you hire a technical person who's an expert. One of the problems that we ran into was some of the things that were described as the way to do some of the magic in the script are a little dangerous on a small wooden stage in a small wooden building.
Don't tell the fire marshal, right?
Right. So we had to change up what we did, and we have tried to use more modern materials, play around a little bit with music, much like they did in Bewitched and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
We also play around with the lighting. There are a few specific effects. We have crew involved in certain things. So it's really been kind of a mix of different things, finding different ways to make things work and try and keep it interesting from that standpoint. But I really believe that it's got to be the actors who sell it. And if they don't sell it, then it doesn't come across correctly. And I think that they are doing a very good job.
fun.
Mm-hmm. Without burning down the house.
Exactly. Yes. And there are a number of reasons you don't want to do that, not least of which is your partnership with Nickel Plate Arts. Yes. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, we're very excited about this opportunity. This is Nickel Plate Arts is an arts collaborative group in Hamilton County, and we have had a wonderful opportunity to work with them. They have gathered a group of local artists together, and they have created an art gallery based on a set of dialogue from the script of Bell, Book, and Candle.
Wow.
So all of these artists have created new pieces of work based on this theme of romance and magic, based on the portion of the script that we decided to work with them. And so then the gallery will actually be on display in the Belfry Theater through the run of Bell, Book, and Candle.
With works for sale?
Works for sale, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so audience members who come and see the show will get a chance to see the artwork, get a chance to, you know, really experience it there. And if they love it, they can purchase it and take it home at the end of the run. So we're really excited about being able to bring in this arts partner and really, you know, promote the whole arts community
sure.
in Hamilton County through this experience.
Exactly.
So we're very excited about it.
Do you have a favorite line from the show?
Favorite line?
Ooh, good question.
Now you're going to have to give me a second because I'm going to have to think about it.
All of them, right?
Not that I can give you without an awful lot of context. I mean,
I understand.
There are some very funny lines, but if you don't see the lead up, it's like a long joke. If I don't give you the setup, it just loses something. There are some very wonderful funny lines. So I don't have a specific favorite. Maybe Kelly does.
One of my favorite scenes is the first time we meet the author, Sidney Redledge. He is sitting in the living room of Jillian's apartment, and he's talking about, I could spot a witch. I'd know exactly what they would look like. And he's staring right at Jillian. And you're in on the joke. The audience is in on the joke. And it's hilarious because there are 5 minutes of him going on about how he could spot witches and witches who are men. They're called warlocks. And Nikki's sitting there on the side of the couch staring at him just with this devilish look on his face, and because everybody is in on the joke except the author, is one of my favorite scenes. I love that.
Sharon Gamble with Belfry Theater's Bell, Book, and Candle director Jeff Bick and publicist Kelly Bedell. Get tickets online at thebelfrytheater.com. That's theater with an R-E at the end, thebelfrytheater.com. And while you're there, you can learn about the Nickel Plate Arts Gallery show inspired by the play. Check out the dinner and a show special, too. Belfry Theater's Bell, Book, and Candle opens January 31st and runs through February 16th. Again, that's thebelfrytheater.com, or you can call 773-1085, 773-1085.
Hey, Travis, would you turn that light up over there?
Sure thing, Sharon. What do you need?
It's easier for me to do my shadow puppets.
Shadow puppets?
You know why I'm doing shadow puppets?
Why are you doing shadow puppets, Sharon?
Because Groundhog Day is this Sunday. It's also Super Bowl Sunday.
We're not
in the Super Bowl, so I'm paying more attention to Groundhog
Day. And it's the first time in 3,000 years the Groundhog Day and Super Bowl have been at the same time.
I did not realize the Super Bowl was that old.
It was sort of like, you know, Hanukkah and Thanksgiving.
I see that. Well, we have some items for you to do whether or not winter keeps stretching on that calendar we call.
What do we do?
What do you got?
Nothing with a groundhog, unfortunately.
Excellent.
Hey, just a heads up, Art and Soul 2014 is going on through really all February and March, actually. This is an annual event celebrating African-American art and artists in Indiana that the Arts Council does, and they do it primarily at the Arts Garden. And in fact, they're doing a big kickoff on Friday. So if you're listening to us Thursday night, Friday at noon, they're having a big kickoff with Amos Brown, a live performance by the Toy Factory, and refreshments, and all sorts of artists are going to be performing, and that is free and open to the public. But then there's lots of great art at the Arts Garden throughout the entire month celebrating art and soul, as well as free performances, too.
Fantastic.
Yeah, you can get more information actually at the indiearts.org website and just check out Art and Soul.
Very good. Hey, through February 9th, Tribe Jacobs, Nina Raine's play about a young deaf man in his 20s whose family has, as he's grown up, they've refused to teach him sign language and they've kind of forced him to read lips. And it's all about his discovery that there are other ways to be and how we choose our families, hence the name Tribes. It's on stage at the Basile Theater at the Phoenix through February 9th. Very thought-provoking play that has a lot of comedy in it as well.
Very cool. Hey, Sharon, you may remember last week I was talking about how visitors to First Friday at IMOCA...
Swimsuits, hot tubs!
Oh, I want to be clear about something because I sort of implied last week that anybody could bring their swimsuit to jump into the hot tub that's part of the Empire Never Ended exhibit inspired by Philip K. Dick's Valis. And because of insurance reasons, it can only be members of IMOCA. But that being said, you can become a member of IMOCA at the opening on the 7th of February when they have that hot tub there. So if you're not already a member, you can become a member, bring your swimsuit, and jump right in. It's part of a whole cool exhibit at IMOCA down in Fountain Square.
I saw a little TV news spot about the home show that's going on at the State Fairgrounds. And, of course, they were highlighting fire pits for reasons I don't have to explain, and also saying that hot tubs were an especially popular feature of
yes,
the home show.
For so. Home shows and art exhibits, apparently,
art
right
exhibits.
Now.
Exactly. There is no Art of the Matter hot tub.
I'm not
saying that that couldn't change. I'm just saying. Hey, I have no idea how to get from there mm-hmm. to my new topic, so we're leaping over the divide. The Indiana Arts Commission has sent out a reminder that you have not much time left if you want to apply for the IAC's Individual Artists Program. You need to complete the online application process, and it's only available online, so you need to get yourself to a computer, by February 7th. You need to live and work in somewhere in Indiana. You can request up to $2,000 through this grant program. It does not require matching funds, and the grants are intended to assist artists with specific project-related costs that will help them further their artistic careers. Now, they do these on a rotating basis. The art forms that are eligible this year: visual arts, photography, design, media, crafts, and folk arts. So those are the areas this year, and you can find more by going online and just looking up in.gov/arts/individual-artist-program. in.gov/arts/individual-artist-program.
Okay.
Do it soon.
Time for one last thing.
Yep.
Jan Aldridge Clark, a local jazz harpist, performing at First Congregational UCC on 7171 North Pennsylvania concert Saturday, February 8th, 7 to 9. She'll be doing contemporary tunes and jazz and original songs as well. Should be a lot of fun. Sharon, that's all the time we've got.
So, send your right thoughts in the direction of Punxsutawney Phil and any other groundhog you happen to know. We want winter to be over.
Very good. We'll be back next week with that calendar we call.
What'll we do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Janet Allen directs three fun-loving stories in one night when Kurt Vonnegut's Who Am I This Time? And Other Conundrums of Love opens to IRT audiences this weekend. Travis DiNicola spoke with Janet about the play and other things going on at the IRT.
Janet, Happy New Year.
Thanks, Travis, and to you.
Thanks.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you as well. Great way to kick off 2014 at the IRT with a play based on Vonnegut's writings. How cool is this?
We're having so much fun.
Tell me about this, because it's not a play that Vonnegut wrote.
No, it isn't.
Okay.
It is based on three short stories he wrote, however.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
A gang together under the very long title, Kurt Vonnegut's Who Am I This Time? And Other Conundrums of Love. Have you seen a play title recently that had the word conundrum in it?
No, I haven't seen a play title that long either in a while.
Come on down. Well, we have two plays on stage right now with the longest
titles
on the planet, so we can talk about that. So this is three. picked by Aaron Posner, who's the adapter. And they are three from Welcome to the Monkey House.
Okay.
They are Who Am I This Time, not surprisingly, his little theater ditty. And Long Walk to Forever, one of the most famous of the short stories. Partially autobiographical, I imagine. And the third one is Go Back to Your Precious Wife and Son, which is a much more sardonic idea of love.
Yes,
so there's kind of a journey between young love and then theater love and then love and loss through divorce and relationship between parents and children.
When were these adapted for the theater?
Aaron originally adapted them actually quite a long time ago when he was artistic director at the Arden Theater in Philadelphia, like 15 or 20 years ago.
Okay, so when Vonnegut was still alive.
Yeah, and when the one-off thing was still what happened with the licensing of Vonnegut stuff for the theater, and Vonnegut said, sure, you can adapt them, but you can't do it more than once. So they did it at Arden, and that was that, and they had a lovely time.
Okay.
And then after Vonnegut died and the situation changed with his agent, Mr. Farber, saying, yeah, now we're going to license things so you can do them repeatedly and license them. So it's
these
about
have not
be...
been done for a while. No one's seen these for a while.
Well, they may have been done elsewhere by other adapters or something, but this is now getting printed and getting going through the licensing process and everything as well. So
more
theaters will be able to do it. In
That's
fact,
great.
Six theaters in our regional theater nonprofit circuit are doing it this year.
Very good.
Yeah.
Now, how is this done with the cast? Is it a repertoire cast? And that
It's seven
same actors,
throughout.
Okay.
Yep. Who are playing roles in all three stories?
Mm-hmm.
Some of the roles very diverse, and they're also singing.
Really?
Yeah. I'm grinning about this because I'm directing it and we're having
so
much fun.
You're smirking about it.
It's not a smirk.
Okay.
It's a fun face.
You're in rehearsals right now. We're going to air this right before the show opens, but you're in rehearsals
right
now.
We are indeed. Mm-hmm. So, yes, there was a song written for the show called And So It Goes, not surprisingly. And that is a thing we're using, but we're also using a couple of standards in the show. So they're singing as well. And actors like Ryan Artsberger, who you don't usually see as a musician.
No.
And Robert
Great
Neal
actor.
And Constance Macy.
You got
Macy.
Robert Neal singing?
I do. You know, Robert Neal's secret weapon is really a very accomplished guitar player, and you're going to see some of that too.
Very cool.
Some of the fun.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff. So who's a good audience for this? I mean, of course, Vonnegut fans, but...
You know what? Because these are those early stories in the early 60s that he teased when he wrote about this stuff as the stuff he wrote to sell to ladies' magazines so that he could make enough money to write the novels he really wanted to write, this is very easy access stuff.
Yeah.
This is not so much the Vonnegut we think of that is the black comedy satirist.
Right.
This is the Vonnegut that was capable of writing very beautiful, sweet stories.
Maybe not quite as difficult, maybe not quite as
really,
intentionally vulgar.
Really accessible. They're not in the they're not even cynical.
Yeah.
Which is amazing to work on Vonnegut work that is not natively sort of deeply cynical. But that's part of the fun. So they're generationally accessible. They're accessible to high school kids, college kids, adults of all stripes.
Okay.
Are adults striped? Okay. Well, we'll just have to leave that
for
today. So it's not for little kids.
Yeah. But
anything else is totally fair game and will find a lovely place for themselves.
And you're doing some interesting community outreach.
We
with
are.
This as well,
thank
right?
you. Yeah. Yes. And you're going to help us.
Of course.
On February 9th, one of the big pieces we're doing is you, Travis, are in fact.
I'll be there.
going to moderate a conversation with Dan Wakefield
in
a post-show discussion after a 2 o'clock performance on a Sunday.
Which is very exciting. Dan's a great guy and great author and also. He's the editor of the it was released a year ago in hardcover and has just been released, the Vonnegut Letters.
Yeah.
And so it's just been released in paperback now.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
That's wonderful.
And so he'll be talking about that, and which is great, yeah.
That
and
is
so
great.
We'll be there for the play on Sunday, the 9th, and then afterwards for the discussion. And then I know Dan will be there to sign books and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, because he was obviously, I mean, very close with Vaughn.
And that's a conversation we want to have. We want to do a little, some ditties with you at Indy Reads and some things at the Vonnegut Library. Because the big goal for us is to get people talking about Vonnegut as the hometown boy.
And he really
is. Let's celebrate.
Absolutely.
And that's why we're doing this and why we want to have community conversations.
And you're doing some
it.
Things with the Vonnegut Library, of course.
We are.
Of course, we are.
We've been trading a variety of our literature of late, but we're also going to do some events together.
Very good.
They will cross-promote your event, of course.
Of course.
And they're cross-promoting the show with us as we are cross-promoting their programs, but we want to do something in the library, which we'll, we're working on for February.
Very good, very good. So are your actors enjoying this?
You know, it's so interesting to see these guys.
I would imagine a lot of them are Vonnegut fans anyway.
Yes, some of them are. And in fact, particularly Robert Neal and Constance Macy are two of our three locals who in Shadow 8 Productions have done adaptations of Vonnegut
work. Of course.
So those guys are really pretty knowledgeable about Vonnegut, which is great. And some of our out-of-town actors, there's three actors from Chicago and an actor from New York. And depending on age and things, some of them know Vonnegut's work and some of them don't. So I'm handing out Vonnegut paperbacks like crazy. But one of the most interesting things is people, even people from Indiana who don't know that Vonnegut is from here and so are having this kind of awakening of, wow, we didn't know we could claim Vonnegut as our own. And that's really fun to see.
Yeah, it is really fun to see. Yeah. I mean, definitely there's been a lot more celebration. I think in the Vonnegut Library has had a lot to do with that of celebrating
so
Vonnegut's
you,
work and life.
Because Indy Reads has been very generous about discounts on Vonnegut books around the holidays. Thank you very much.
I
loaded up. And I've been told by some of the Indy Reads staff that you cannot keep a used Vonnegut
that's
on the
true.
Shelf for more than 30 seconds.
That's pretty much it.
And so thank you for discounting the new stuff. That
of
was
course,
really,
of
very,
course.
Very helpful.
Well, Janet, while I have you here, I want to ask you about the other show with another very long title that you have going on.
Yeah.
In addition to the Vonnegut play, you've also got the play going on right now, And Then They Came For Me. Tell me a bit about this.
Yes. I'm going to tell you the whole title first because it's longer than that. And Then They Came For Me, Remembering the World of Anne Frank. Play written by James Still, our playwright in residence, now 18 years ago. This play has been around, literally around the world, played in every state of the Union and in about 20 countries, including translated into a number of foreign languages.
Wow. And I saw it at the IRT myself maybe
2005.
I was going to say about 7-8 years ago.
2005, and we premiered it in 1996. It is easily the most frequently produced play of James's. It is a play that really invites, it's a youth audience focused play. It's a great family piece. Invites kids to understand that while Anne Frank is kind of the icon of Holocaust loss of kids, that there were many other kids involved, obviously millions in the Holocaust. And this play focuses on two of her childhood friends, one who survived Auschwitz and whose mother, after the war, married Otto Frank. And another that survived...
Anne's father.
Anne's father survived in hiding. And both of these young people were classmates and friends of Anne's. So their stories of survival are enormously interesting. Anne is a character in it, but a secondary character.
Yeah.
So she's kind of the touchstone that, that threads us through because we know her story well. And then how these other two kids, also teenagers... lived through these experiences.
And it's as much of a story about teenagers as it,
it is
about the history that they had lived through.
It is,
I mean, it's just their regular, everyday, you know, things that teenagers deal with.
Indeed. And there are four Central Indiana teenage kids acting these roles. The fourth role is a Nazi youth character that James explores in a very heartbreaking way, a way that we're both repelled by and also very moved by because of the coercion of kids into some of this doctrine.
It's a very, very strong play. And as you said, I know that you're mainly showing it to students who are coming in. So those are most of the performances. But there are some performances on Fridays and Saturdays and some Sundays and stuff. And the people can come see this. Though it doesn't have quite the full run of a schedule that a lot of regular IRT plays do.
Correct. It's isolated to weekends, but we're very much hoping that families will get there and keep this conversation going with their kids.
I know
kids.
There's a lot of like 3 o'clock matinees on Saturdays, which is great to be able to come to that. Well, excellent. Very good, Janet. Yeah, a lot of great stuff going on right now.
We're busy.
It's
a good thing.
And just real quick, what's after these two plays?
Yeah.
Next thing on your horizon?
The next thing up is Other Desert Cities, John Robin Bates' play that premiered in New York, played Lincoln Center for quite a while, then moved to Broadway, which is a fascinating contemporary study of a famous family that explodes when the adult daughter writes a tell-all book about her politically minded parents.
Interesting. That sounds very timely.
It is fascinating. We're co-producing it with Arizona Theater Company. Huh. It's in rehearsal there now.
Okay.
Plays in Tucson and Phoenix and then moves to Indianapolis.
Looking
James
forward
is
to that
directing
too.
It.
Perfect.
So he will be here for that. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Janet Allen, always a pleasure to chat with you
Thank
about the
you,
IRT.
Thank you, Travis. And back to you. Love seeing you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Travis DiNicola with the IRT's Janet Allen. Kurt Vonnegut's Who Am I This Time opens this weekend and runs through February 23rd. Ticket information is available at irtlive.com, irtlive.com.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Vaselli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m. I'll find out about a new initiative from Keep Indianapolis Beautiful.
I'll get a preview of the play The Graduate at Marion University.
And then I'll talk with author Porter Shreve about his brand new novel called The End of the Book. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.